SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three at the races, and we've been a little bit behind, and Kieran McLaughlin very gracious to wait for the visit because he had a terrific weekend. Threw Dream Pauline in at the last minute to the Sugar Swirl. That paid off. Came running a little late in the Fort Lauderdale. Curbin, a very good second. And then a maiden that, if you didn't notice, in New York, Heichel. Looks like there's a big upside. That's just a few of Kieran's recent successes. He joins us now. Kieran, Merry Christmas to you, the family, the barn, and congratulations on a great weekend.
Thank you very much, Steve. I appreciate it.
Let's start with the winner and Dream Pauline. We talked with Mike Welch on Saturday, and Mike had made mention that you kind of made a late decision with her, and boy, did it pay off.
Yeah, it was very interesting. She's been a little unlucky. She didn't get in the Raven Run at Kingland. She didn't get in the Breeders' Cup. We ran her the next day after the Breeders' Cup against older fillies, and she had a rough trip. So then we were trying to figure out what the next spot, and we talked about the La Brea at Santa Anita, grade one for straight three-year-old fillies on December 26th. And then the Garland of Roses came up a five-horse field. We entered there but drew the one hole. And Stone Street got together between the management of their team and asked me to scratch and ship to Florida and run in the grade three Sugar Swirl. And I have to thank them for making that decision. And not that she probably would have won in New York, but this was more important to win a grade three with a filly that has such great pedigree.
Exactly. And, you know, you look at her, she got in under the wire last year in December. She breaks her maiden at first asking. And then you had to, you know, you had to deal with some things that turned out we didn't see her till she came back with that wonderful performance at Saratoga that got everybody excited. And then another, another period of time before, as you explained, you know, you shopped some spots and things didn't really work out. But she's the Stone Street homebred out of the wonderful Dream Rush by Tappet, and this really worked out perfectly. She gets a great at stake win to end her three-year-old season. So really a satisfying conclusion to the year after some fits and starts.
Yes, I would like to say two things. First of all, my team in New York, Joe Lee, my assistant there, and his team did a fabulous job with her.
Did we lose? I'm not sure. Did we lose Kieran? Yeah. I think that sounded... Yeah. No. Casey says, okay, still there, but... Figure this out and see if get Casey get Kieran back on and should he might remember, you know, for those of you that don't remember Dream Rush, it's kind of funny because it's very funny that her name comes up on this timing because I got an email from a journalist in Europe asking about the conversation we had with Halsey Miner years ago, and Dream Rush. Halsey Miner had Dream Rush. I think Kieran's back.
Can you hear me?
There we go. Yep.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
No problem.
Hey, Rick Violet. Rick Violet trained Dream Rush, and he was a good friend and a great person that the sport lost last month. So it's but it's great that she won a great at stake, and we're very happy with her.
Well, what do you foresee going, going forward? You got a good program down there in Florida for the four-year-olds and up.
Yeah. January 26th is the Hurricane Birdie Grade 3/7/8. So it's a big day, the Pegasus Day. So provided all goes well, we'll point that way. She's very sound, Philly. She's just been unlucky and got a temperature once for the priors and didn't get in races. But she's doing great, and we hope to make the Hurricane Birdie.
This was pretty exciting for those that haven't had a chance to see the Sugar Swirl. Dream Pauline forward, from the break, and for this you did draw outside, which was okay. I don't think you minded in this particular circumstance to be drawn wide, and she gets confronted ultimately by Stormy Embrace, Kathleen O'Connell's nice filly. What were your thoughts as you watched that battle? It went right to the wire.
I was nervous and worried that she was going to get by us, and Javier said that Dream Pauline was waiting a little bit on the other filly, and when he asked her and hit her, she responded. So that made me feel better, but I thought we were going to, be second there for a minute at the 16th pole. So it worked out great. I was worried a little bit about the track because we hardly even train on a sloppy track, but she handled the track very well, and Javier is 2-for-2 on her now. So all went well.
Very nice. Dream Pauline and the Stone Street homebred, and we'll look forward to her four-year-old year. Let's stay at Gulfstream, Kieran, and talk about the way things unfolded in the Fort Lauderdale and the good day of racing, although it was a pretty dank afternoon, kind of wet and dreary looking at Gulfstream. Kerban, I mean, what else could you do, I suppose?
He ran second, but the horse on the lead was left alone on the lead. We thought Black Type might go with him, and backing up a minute to the jockey, it was interesting. Joe Bravo was coming in to ride Zenner, and then when I started asking several riders to ride us, they all had mounts, and I said, well, maybe the race is going to overfill or split. I doubt that they would split a grade of stake, but they ended up with 19 in the race, and Zenner got on the also eligible because he was not a grade of stake winner. And so Joe Bravo was on Zenner, and I just put him on both. So it worked out well that he rode Kerbain so well. And we were just had to wait a little while down on the inside, but he squeezed through, turn for home and finish very strongly to be second.
Very much so, and the race was being won on the front end by Edgar, who this horse, and in fact the whole race, Kieran, it was pretty decided basically on the backstretch when nobody confronted Glorious Empire. You had to know it was going to be a problem. And when I handicapped at first, I thought Kerban could be a major player here, and I thought there's not enough speed, and they're going a mile and an eighth, and he's not, even if he comes with his late run, I didn't get the sense that he would have a chance to really close. But he closed basically the best of anybody, and there's nothing you can do in a race like this if there isn't some starch taken out of a leader like Glorious Empire.
Correct, right. Edgar rode a great race, and everything went well, and we ended up just second best. But we did have a good trip other than having to wait a little bit on the turn, but he saved ground and got up the inside, so we were very happy with the race.
Well, you've got to be very pleased with his couple of months since he came your way and came to the United States, because he wins the Baruch in thrilling fashion and then came back and did what he could do in the Shadwell, and to some extent he was really a victim of pace there too, and only gets beat a handful of lengths despite a slow pace. So he really has marked himself going into his six-year-old year. He's lightly raced. That was only his 16th start. There should be a lot to look forward to with him.
Yeah, so we're very pleased that he ended up in our barn, and we hope to have a big year with him for sure. He's a really nice horse.
He's a Spitestown, too, and there's obviously some speed coming from there and out of a mare named Flip Flop, a French mare. And he's interesting. The mile in the eighth, talk about that and what you think it bodes for, going forward. Are you going to be interested in stretching him further, or do you want to keep him, to a mile and an eighth?
Yeah, that's a good question. A mile to a mile and eighth probably is what we will keep him toward. Obviously, we'd love to point for the Shadwell mile again since they own him, but that's a long way away. So we will probably keep him a mile to a mile and an eighth. I mean, we could stretch to a mile and a quarter. He's just really a neat horse that does everything right, and hopefully we can win a few graded stakes this year.
What's he like to be around, out of curiosity?
Yeah, he's a neat horse, a really neat horse to be around. He's happy all the time. He's the first time we took him to the turf to work at Oklahoma, he unseated the exercise rider and ran around the turf course 2 miles with no rider, and I was just scared to death something might happen to him because he had never been there. He didn't know where to go on and off the track, so I was worried. But luckily, Kendrick Carmouche grabbed him, ducked under the rail and grabbed him and held on to him till we got the rider back on and we went home. But he's just feels good, so that's the only negative he has is he's a happy horse.
I had heard about, I didn't know who the horse was, but I had heard about the horse that Kendrick had grabbed, and so it turns out that it's Curvan. That's pretty funny.
Yeah,
love it.
Well,
we like those are always scary when they're running around loose. But I think there's some things to look forward to with this one. And good day down at Gulfstream. Let's take things up to New York. And what do we got here, Haeckel? And how excited are you and the team about his 3-year-old season?
Yes, he ran very well the first time. He got away a little slow, and we had told Jose Ortiz he might get away a little slow, but don't give up. He has talent, and he came flying just to miss and finish second. So we thought he would break better and be closer this time, but he broke well, but he just takes himself back a little bit and came running and up the rail and finished very well for Rajiv Mirage this time and winning by a neck. But he's a very nice horse. He's a half to Takaful, who was a very good sprinter that we lost last year. So I don't know what's going to happen, how far he'll go, but we have to try and stretch him out, and we will do that. We'll have to look for the right race.
He's by Daher.
Yes, and a half to Takaful. So, he should stretch out some, but we don't know how far.
How quickly will you try him in stakes company?
Yeah, I mean, we would if the right one was there. I mean, looking ahead, the race comes up, the Drome is in 2 weeks. That's the right distance, a mile, but it's quick back. And then the Fairgrounds is a mile and 70. There's an allowance race in New York in the middle of the month, and February 9th is 7/8. Stake in New York. So just not sure. I will talk to Rick Nichols at Shadwell and we'll try and figure out if we need to bring him down here or stay up there and figure it out. So I'm not sure where we're going to go. We need to stretch him out and try because he is a stake horse.
Well, for those that want to put him in your watch list, if you didn't catch the race on Saturday at Aqueduct, HAIKAL, and I think that was a good group too, and 85 buyer in that second start to break the maiden. So we'll look forward to another Shadwell 3-year-old potentially on the Derby trail. Let's catch up, Kieran. It's funny because there were a couple of things that happened over the last 3-4+ weeks that I came close to calling you, so I'm kind of glad that we can do it all right now. True Timber ran that tremendous Cigar Mile and now is confirmed for the Pegasus.
Yes, he's. We were worried about stretching him out to a mile, and he ran a huge race. Everything went well for us that day and perfect and it was exciting, and now we're going to try and stretch him out further to a mile and an eighth. But he did gallop out strong that day in the mile, so he's a really nice horse, been very consistent, and we look forward to stretching him out to the mile and an eighth.
Of course, you know, Gulfstream speed, little speed conducive, and so I suppose, you know, part of the, you know, the thought process is that the way he ran and, like you say, the way he finished, that it could be conducive to his style, and if he can, you know, if a mile and an eighth is just within his scope, then why not?
Yeah, he was fourth in the Wood Memorial as a three-year-old, a mile and eighth, and he's just a better horse now and doing well. So we're happy we tried the mile, and it worked out, and we're happy that Calumet wants to try the Pegasus. So we'll get him to Florida here pretty soon. He's still in New York and train toward that race.
You know, a quick question about the surface. I saw that comment that Todd made that, you know, with everybody coming down, and, you know, even though a lot of horsemen these days, including Todd, have got horses almost year-round at Gulfstream, what's been your early impression, Kieran, with that main track? And, of course, Saturday, you know, everybody was dealing with a wet, sealed surface. You know, but I've heard some interesting, you know, early reviews here as the winter gets started at Hallandale.
I've run one horse on, and that was Dream Pauline. I think the track is fabulous. I've only run one, so I don't have any opinion. I can't say anything, but we're one for one on it, so I'm real happy with it.
That's great. It's so great. Yeah. I love it. Well, good job. All right, so we'll watch and see for some some reaction and thoughts. Give us an update on Enliven out of the Demoiselle. And I'm sure there was a little disappointment with the way things unfolded there.
Yeah, she disappointed us that day, but she might not have liked it in between and just didn't have a good day. So she came out of the race in good shape, and we're not sure if we're going to back her up to the Ruthless January 27th at Aqueduct, or stay long in the Busanda the next week, February 3rd. But she's in New York doing well, and we're just going to throw that race out.
I want to ask you about a horse that is a little bit under the radar and who you're obviously taking your time with. What's next for Face It? Because the maiden win, and then the, you know, very quickly you turned around and you pop with an allowance win a couple of weeks ago, and it looks like she's headed somewhere.
Yeah, we're going to try the ladies handicap on January 20th, a mile and an eighth at Aqueduct. She's won her last two impressively, so now it's time to step up to stakes. We hope that we can do that and see how it goes. It's a big step up from an ALN to the stakes company, but she's that type, and we'd love to get some black type. Being a half to, it's tricky by tapping.
Well, and we talked about her when you know, a couple of weeks ago when she was lined up for that allowance, something, I forget what happened. There was something going on that involved either Catboat. I guess it was the fact that Enliven was running too, they were related. They were closely related. Enliven being out of its tricky. That's what it was.
Yes, correct. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Face It has a great name because of her face. You know, she's a really neat marking.
That's right. That's right. And there's obvious upside, and this is one of those that, you know, you are charged when it comes to Shadwell and Godolphin. When you get these kinds of fillies, and it's important to get that, you know, the black type, and get it as, you know, as high up as possible.
Correct. That's what we try and do for sure. And for Kieran, Stone Street.
Absolutely, for Stone Street. You're right. That's it.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
And you've had a good good history of it. Some other who's poking around the barn that we haven't seen yet among the soon to be 3-year-olds, either, you know, late 2-year-old starters or 3-year-old early in January.
We're not real strong with anything right now. We'll just have to see how it unfolds in January. We'll obviously run a few firsters, but we don't have that many to talk about, so hopefully something will show up.
Well, they always do, and when they're ready, you'll have them tuned up. Kieran, best for 2019. Thanks for everything all year long. Continued success. Best for the barn. Merry Christmas. Happy, healthy New Year.
Thank you very much to you, and the same to you. Thanks for doing all you do for horse racing.
I appreciate that. Kieran McLaughlin. And you can follow Kieran, of course, on Twitter. And Kieran, you know, Kieran was an early, he was an early adopter. He jumped on board the Twitter opportunity, and it's under KPM Racing Stable. KPM Racing Stable. Follow Kieran. And looks like he's got a nice spattering of existing stake horses and some that are ticketed in that direction. We're ticketed to the last half hour on this Monday. It's been busy. And I also haven't had a chance to follow up on the conversation we had with Steve Anderson. The action at Los Al Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday, last night. The quarter horses. And in fact, last night, because I was up till all hours for this because of the Eagle game. So got a chance to see Flash and Roll. And, in fact, Justin Joyner goes back-to-back. He won Saturday night. He won the Champion of Champions with Bodacious Eagle. Paid $11.40. And that was thrilling. If you didn't see the Champion of Champions, it was a four-horse scrum at the wire, but this filly, holy cow, Flash and Roll, everything that Steve Anderson suggested she was, owner Scott Bryant and G.R. Carter, who, you know, we talked a little bit about. G.R. sort of, he made sort of a dismount that was 50% Frankie Dettori, 50% Tony Black. He does like a backwards sort of jump that, and then sort of kicks out, and yeah, he was plenty excited to win the Futurity last night at Los Al. Yeah, Eagle game, Los Al. $1.8 million and Remington. It was there was a lot going on last night after hours. John White is going to join us. We'll get John's end-of-the-year thoughts. We'll see what he thinks about that turf division, see if his vote was influenced by Glorious Empire. Back after this, John White.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Right before she died, I think. In fact, she was. If you watch the the video, you can literally. I think it was maybe 4 months or so before she passed. Unbelievable. She could belt it out. We'll definitely get to White Christmas too from that album, which is unbelievable. John White joins us, and got about 20 minutes to fill out on what turned out to be a busy Monday. Chucky Lawrence and Tony Mitchell for the first time ever. Kieran McLaughlin, Johnny D. And John joins us for his end of the year thoughts. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Hard to believe it. Just a week ago, we were sitting across from each other at Santa Anita, which was a very enjoyable visit. And by the way, you predicted that my Eastern Washington University Eagles would handle Maine, and you were correct. And so Eastern Washington on to the finals for that against powerful North Dakota State. So looking forward to that for me, for my alma mater, at least they're going to have a chance for a national championship.
Well, they'll have their hands full. This North Dakota State.
As Johnny D was and you were articulating last night, the prevailing thought was that the Philadelphia Eagles would have their hands full with the Los Angeles Rams, and I thought that the Eagles had a very good chance to win that game last night because the Rams have been struggling, and I thought with the quarterback change and the fact that the Eagles would be playing on a national stage with a lot of pride at stake as the defending Super Bowl champions, I thought they were going to give the Rams everything they wanted, and they did and more. And And that was a well-deserved. I thought the thing was they were leaving that door open, and I thought maybe the Rams were going to pull it out to go into overtime. But because the Eagles basically, I thought, outplayed them really most of the game. So that would have been a tough beat for the Eagles if they'd lost that. So I was really looking for the Eagles to have a good chance to win that game. I thought the line of 13.5 was ridiculous, but it's not ridiculous because the line is predicated on trying to split the money. So I mean, that's, people don't. I chuckle when people say, "Well, you know, those guys in Vegas sure know how to predict games." Well, they're not. That's not what they're trying to do. They're trying to predict the betting, which is the same thing I do as the morning line maker. I'm trying to predict the betting, not the outcome. And fortunately for me, when I'm wrong, you know, the track doesn't lose tons of money because it's pari mutuel wagering. But when a bookmaker lays a bad line and they get hammered one way or the other, they get drilled financially. So that's why you see the people like the Johnny Avellos and the best line makers last in the game, and the others drift off away from the scene because they don't survive, because they live and die by those numbers. And so while the number, I just thought it was really a ton of points for the defending Super Bowl champions, and I thought it was kind of out of whack. In fact, Lem Banker, I read his book. He was a very famous bettor in Las Vegas. I got a chance to meet him actually once when I was at the Mirage Hotel, and Mike Tyson actually popped into the room, and people were really jumping up and down over Mike Tyson because at the time he was the champ. And but I was more interested in Lem Banker and meeting him and talking to him about gambling and so forth. And one of the things he wrote in his book was that there's many times in football an over-adjustment when there's a quarterback change in terms of the point spread, and that these are not, it's not like college where maybe the second or third string quarterback is a big drop-off, unless maybe it's Alabama. And he said you get real value if you're playing the team. And I implemented his philosophy there with Frank Reich when he was with Buffalo, and Kelly would get hurt, and I would play Buffalo. And man, there was no drop off at all with Frank Reich. So I utilized his philosophy to a financial rewarding situation on numerous occasions. And anyway, it was kind of nice for the Eagles to salvage something from what obviously has been a disappointing season. I think Johnny D was right. And, in fact, it was interesting last night that the comment was made that Johnny D made the other day, which is that last year everything seemed to turn out right for the Eagles. This year it just seemed like everything, just on decisions and everything, it just didn't work out.
No, it's been very strange. I mean, things like turnovers, and you know, you can, and again, to try to equate it to racing, a lot of it, you know, you can compare to just having racing luck and
that's
having.
Right.
You know, having you know, if you got a horse that needs some pace, or you know, a horse that's going to have to pass a bunch of horses, and you know, you could be loaded, and you know, the holes don't open. You find yourself pinned down inside, and you know what worked 3 weeks ago, a month ago when you ran and won, doesn't work. You know, a month later, it's been very funny. And then last night, what was odd was all those things that had been sort of missing all year, they all were happening constantly. I mean, balls were bouncing the right way and things like that. It's weird. Football's funny that way. It's as Johnny said, a lot of emotion, and you know, games can swing. I mean, the Eagles were ready to put the game away when the Rams got that interception down on the goal line, and that gave them the momentum to, you know, put up those 10 points and make it an interesting finish anyway. But
and what you say about a horse needing pace or possibly having a troubled trip or everything, that's what makes what Winks has done so unbelievable, or what Zenyatta was able to do, particularly, I mean, just to win races, but especially when your style is to come from well off the pace like those two. When you consider, you know, Zenyatta only got beat one time in a photo finish with her running style, I mean, it just
right.
adds to her accomplishment, really. And what Winks has done to put together this winning, I mean, it's one thing for a horse you know, like a Man of War, who just basically would take a race by the throat right from the get-go. And, I mean, you know, because then you're going to stay out of trouble. But for a come-from-behind thoroughbred to be able to put together, you know, long winning streaks is really amazing.
Utilize that, you know, that conversation and the turf equation that has kind of predominated to somewhat this morning with Chucky Lawrence visiting, and then Johnny and I discussed the turf championship. John, where do you stand on this category? Because it's a really, you look through those past performances, and okay, Heart to Heart won two grade ones. I mean, Andy brought that up with me on Wednesday, and he said, you know, who's the only horse that won two grade ones? And I mean, what you look at Heart to Heart season overall, and you say, that I can't. How do you vote for that? It's a weird set of horses and some results that really make this difficult.
Well, for me this year, it's the Advil category because it's really giving me a headache. I'm just in an absolute, you know, not sure what I'm going to do. And I've been looking at it already. I already was considering Heart to Heart because of the two grade one wins. But, you know, and I will say this, Glorious Empire's, he was never out of my thinking, but he certainly, added to his resume with this win. And he's in the mix for sure to me. Stormy Liberal, I think he should be in the mix because there's just no candidate that you look at that you feel 100% comfortable with. I mean, Expert Eye is Johnny D was articulated. I mean, you really have to consider him considering... Mm. You know, he won the Breeders' Cup Mile and beat many of our top horses. One thing that kind of hurt this category a little bit is the fact that the Breeders' Cup Turf was taken by Enable, because if a male had taken this with some credentials, the Breeders' Cup Turf, then, you know, that might have made this category easy. So it's a confluence of circumstances here that has led us to this, and this is what happens sometimes. I mean, I've been voting in the Eclipse Award since 1976, and this to me is one of the toughest votes I will have cast since 1976. It really, really is. And I honestly don't know. I mean, pretty much it's going to be one of the ones I just said, because I don't think I left anybody particularly out that I would consider. But, I mean, I'm leaving the door open if I get some kind of a bolt of lightning in my head to solve this puzzle. But it's a puzzle. I think I'm one of my Express Bet columns each year, I predict the Eclipse Awards, and I've had a very good success rate at doing that. And I don't feel like I've got basically almost any chance to predict who's going to get this. I don't have any idea.
Yeah, you know, I put up a total of 8 PPs: Stormy Liberal, Raging Bull, Robert Bruce, Glorious Empire, Heart to Heart, Catapult, Catholic Boy, and Channel Maker. And frankly, some of this was just on Twitter. You can only put 4 images attached to a tweet, so I was sort of limited somewhat. There are other horses that won graded stakes, but most of these have multiple wins and placements. And you know, the more difficult. One of the more difficult parts of this is the fact that you got milers to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the year that Heart to Heart had, and Catapult in particular. And I mean, to my thinking somewhat, I like Catapult even more than Heart to Heart. Catapult,
but he was more consistent. One thing about Catapult, he was more consistent. On the other hand, he didn't get a single grade one. So, that's the thing. You just go back and forth on these to where, I mean, like I say, there is not a candidate that isn't going to have, you know, that's the perfect candidate here.
Yeah.
And, well, you know, but I certainly I can understand you throwing Catapult into the mix. Honestly, I mean, because he was very consistent. You know, he was never out of the exacta in any of his starts during the year.
Exactly, four starts. There's people that are, you know, what do you do with Catholic Boy? Okay, he won the Pennine Ridge and the Belmont Derby. How does that translate in the scheme of things? It's very weird. Channel Maker made $644,000. He danced a lot of dances. He traveled to California to try the Kill Row, which was an ambitious start of the year in March, and ran fine. He ran well. The Bowie's Hero and Next Shares finished in front of him. He got beat a length. He tried a variety of distances, a mile and an eighth, a couple of times, a mile and a quarter, a mile and three-eighths. You have another factor, John, that I think is adding to this, to the difficulty of these discussions, and that's how often horses had to run over soft and yielding turf all year long.
Very good point.
That complicates it.
It sure does. In fact, I mean, it certainly had to be one of the rainier years in New York that I can ever remember. I mean, it seemed like practically the whole second half of the year, they hardly ever got a chance to run on the turf in New York. So, and, you know, we certainly had a lot of rain throughout the year in terms of these major races, and that even includes the Breeders' Cup, which were races not run on firm turf. So you're absolutely right. That's another complicating aspect of this already challenging division. And, it's, like I say, I've been voting since 1976, and this, I cannot remember a division where I have had this much trouble. I mean, usually you can get it down to maybe one or two or three, and then you kind of debate them on this. But, I mean, this is like getting it down to five, six, or seven. And, I mean, you can just have pros and cons for all of them. I mean, you really, really can. So, as I say, trying to predict, I mean, beyond who I feel deserves it and who I will vote for, then when I take that hat off and put on the predicting hat, this is going to be one to where, I mean, I can't even begin to think who I would predict is going to win this division. So, I mean, it's, you talk about wide open. This is the widest of opens.
Yeah, and you needed, you know, there's a few that just simply needed a better performance in the Breeders' Cup.
Yep. If Catapult wins the mile, to me, then it's easy.
Yeah. If Robert Bruce hits the board in the turf, if he's third in the turf, he's a slam dunk champion.
Yep. I would have to agree. Yes, I agree.
With the Arlington Million and the Fort Marcy, and second in the Joe Hirsch on soft going. I mean, this is going to be fun. We've got a couple of weeks to worry about.
Like we say, he's deserving. But I mean, even like Glorious Empire, I mean, you can look at his Breeders' Cup two ways. On the one hand, you can say, do we really want to make the champion a horse who gets eased in the Breeders' Cup turf? On the other hand, because he was eased, as handicappers, we know that's a race that basically you just draw a line through the race.
Yep.
And if you draw a line through that race, then suddenly his resume looks pretty darn good, really. So,
yep.
But like I say, it kind of leaves a little bit of a bad taste in your mouth when you say, okay, let's crown our champion. And how do you do in the biggest race in the division for the entire year? Well, he was eased. So it's a perplexing category, to say the least. It really, really is.
John, about 3 or 4 minutes to wrap up. Some final thoughts over the course of the year, that what you take away and what you're looking forward to for after the first of the year.
Well, take away, of course, this debate for Horse of the Year, and I mean it. To me, I thought Johnny D did a very good case of articulating the pros and cons for both Justify and Accelerate. I certainly can't argue with anybody that votes for Accelerate. He's a bona fide candidate. He had a Horse of the Year campaign. But a few weeks ago, Bob Ike, a popular handicapper here in Southern California, on a radio show said something that resonated with me, and that was, he said, Accelerate had a Horse of the Year campaign, but Justify had a historic campaign. And, you know, when you kind of boil it down to its simplicity, you know, I keep hearing the people that are adamant about Accelerate. They say, well, you know, he ran throughout the year, which is true. I'm not going to diminish that at all. You know, he went from February to November, which, you know, deserves respect and deserves all the attention it deserves. But he won a total of 6 races during the year. Justify won a total of 6 races during the year, too, which kind of crystallizes what Justify was able to accomplish in such a short period of time. I mean, they both won the same number of races during the entire year. So, you know, and the Triple Crown is what, you know, when you ask somebody, I thought Frank, Tim Layden on your show, Tim Layden, people should go back, I think, and listen on your archives to what he had to say on the Horse of the Year subject, because he dealt with it very, very eloquently, I thought. And again, he paid respect to both horses. And to me, that's what you have to do. It's not like we're trying to say, mind your biscuits, or somebody should be Horse of the Year. But Justify, you know, what he did here is just, you know, to win that Triple Crown without having run it too, with an undefeated record. And as I mentioned on your show before, in 1978, 2 Triple Crown winners met. It's the only time in the history of American racing the Triple Crown winners ever met. And they were Affirmed and Seattle Slough, and Seattle Slough beat Affirmed both times. But who was the Horse of the Year? It wasn't Seattle Slough. It was Affirmed, even though he lost twice to Seattle Slough. It was Affirmed. So, and if Accelerate had beaten Justify twice, we wouldn't even be having this discussion. On the other hand, if it wasn't for American Pharoah having won the Triple Crown and we had a 40-year drought, and Tim Layden said this and many others, we wouldn't even be having this discussion, because for Justify, if he had won the Triple Crown undefeated to break a 40-year drought, you're going to tell me Accelerate would be Horse of the Year? No way. So I don't think it's fair to Justify to penalize him because he's just coming 3 years after American Pharoah. So, but do I quibble with anybody voting for Accelerate? Not one bit. And if he got it, I wouldn't be disappointed, because John Sadler is a very good friend of mine, and as Johnny D said, he's an outstanding trainer, and he did a great job with Accelerate. You know, this is a horse who was brought along and allowed to develop and had a terrific campaign at the age of 5, and we want that in American racing. But what Justify did is something that I think when you look back 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 50 years from now, people will look back and say, look, and remember the most from this year that we had a Triple Crown winner, because it's only happened 13 times in the history of the sport. And this was the first Triple Crown winner who did not race as a 2-year-old, something that had never been done before. And that's something Accelerate did not do. He did not do anything during the entire year that someone else had never, you know, that had not been done before.
Right.
So,
yeah, that's a great point. I have no doubt. No doubt about it.
So it's, we're going to, I will remember them both from this year, but I think as time goes on, the horse that people are going to remember the most from this year, even though he had such a short campaign, is Justify. And, you know, you made the point that when your discussion with Johnny D, that, you know, Johnny D brought up the fact that, yes, he was retired early, but you've made the point, and that's a big one, there's a good chance, or at least a chance, he might not have retired so soon, but that Scat Daddy element really came into play here. The fact that Scat Daddy died and was such a hot sire, there's no question that that played into this to some extent.
Agreed. And look at Mendelsohn. I mean, Mendelsohn fits that same scenario as well. Well, John, thanks for everything. It was great to be with you and the last week and earlier in the year. We'll look forward to seeing you in person again, of course, like in probably in March for Big Cap Week, and you'll be getting ready to start the line making and the handicapping for the program with the. The racing now less than a week, just a couple days more, 8 days away, opening day at Santa Anita. John, for you and Trace, best wishes. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Steve, and happy holidays and a healthy 2019 to you and Tina and to all of your listeners, because Steve Bick listeners, one thing we know about them, they're racing fans, and so that means they're people that I like, because I like racing fans.
Good job. John White, everybody. And there you go. A very fast 3 hours this morning with Chucky Lawrence, Tony Mitchell, and Kieran, Johnny, and John White. So day one of this last week of the broadcast here in the box. Got to check on what's going on outside. It's a complete disaster, I'll put it that way, with this plumbing issue. Yeah, I can't complain, though. Over the years, there really has been very few of these kinds of repairs. Talking to Jason Beam later today, actually. Jason is going to do a segment with me for his podcast. If you're playing today, let's see what we got for you. Coming into this Monday, Evangeline, Mahoning, and Mountaineer, Parks, Turf Paradise, Zia. Talk to you in the morning, though. Thanks, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Daytime Southern California Thoroughbred Racing action continues Thursday through Sunday at Los Alamitos Racecourse with more stakes action coming up on December 15th and 16th. First post is 1 p.m. on weekdays and 12:30 p.m. on weekends Pacific Time. The weekend action will feature the Soviet Problem Stakes on Saturday, December 15th, and the King Glorious on Sunday, December 16th. All of the top names will be here through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Racing fans, the $1 Los Alamitos Pick Fours continues. The wager has been well received, and the pools figure to grow. Los Alamitos also features a traditional pick six wager. And when the sun goes down, the lights turn on at Los Alamitos with nighttime quarter horse and thoroughbred racing action every Friday through Sunday night. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. Great racing is in store at Los Alamitos Racecourse through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Let's go! For more info, go to losalamitos.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.